when my son was younger, put him in the car in the morning to get him to school, and I'd be crying, he'd be crying, and I'd be like, there's just no way I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. It wasn't until I had a major burnout, and I just said, I'm done, I can't do this for one more minute. I was sick, I was exhausted, and that's the point that I started to change my life. We all have these heroine's journeys as women. For me, it was about really trying to get clear on what is it that I want my life to look like? What is it? Because it's not this. This is not it. I don't want to feel like this every day. I don't want to be this racing, driving, striving, exhausted, burnt out, sick person.
What is authentic leadership, and how can this style of leadership impact our world? And how can we find true happiness and success as female leaders, all while balancing life, patting our head and rubbing our tummies? And what's the biggest challenge that we face as female leaders today, and how can we overcome it? Welcome to Connectedly. I'm Nicole Sherinum, and I am so pleased to bring this conversation to you today. Joining us is Megan Dalla-Kamina, the founder and CEO of Women Rising and a world-leading expert in women's leadership. We discuss leadership and strategies for cultivating a meaningful and balanced life, one of empowerment and connection. And Megan also provides actionable advice on practicing self-care, setting boundaries, and pursuing happiness. Megan is a celebrated coach, influential writer, researcher, and advocate for change, and is known for her brave and refreshing approach to women's empowerment, well-being, and leadership. Megan fuses a 20-year career as an executive and multi-billion dollar strategist for corporate heavyweights with deep academic credentials and more than a decade of researching, teaching, and leading gender diversity and women's leadership initiatives around the world. Megan is also a best-selling author. In 2023, Megan was recognized as BNT's Woman of the Year and Mentor of the Year, and won the 2024 Telstra Best of Business Awards in the Accelerating Women category. Whew, it's so good to have you all here today. Let's get into it, shall we?
Hi, Megan. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm absolutely fabulous. Thank you so, so much for being here with us today.
Thanks for asking. I'm excited.
So first of all, I have to say what made me want to invite you to speak to this community of women was really how much I resonated with some of the work that you do. And I haven't delved that deep, but immediately I felt like I was hit by your authentic passion and realness and power and strength, but yet a calmness and steadiness. So
wow.
Beautiful. That's what I get from you. And so I was so excited just to have an opportunity just to put the personality to what I was feeling.
Well, hopefully it's the same. It's a very apt description, I think, because that's how I try and move through the world. So it's so great that comes through in the work.
Definitely, strongly. So first of all, this podcast is all about happiness and connection and how that they really tie together in many different ways. And I think so on that point, I would love to know from you, what is happiness to you?
It's such a big question, isn't it? I remember, 15 plus years ago when I first started doing work in positive psych. And it was, you know, happiness was on the cover of Time magazine with the smiley face. And, you know, it's so much has evolved since then in terms of the science of happiness. It's funny, I don't think, like in my day-to-day life, I don't think about whether I'm happy or not. I think about, do I feel like my life has meaning? Do I feel that I'm connected? Do I feel contented? Do I feel peaceful and grounded and calm and grateful and these other things? And of course, all of those things lead to what we know as happiness.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't sit around thinking, am I happy today? I don't know. I think a lot of people do, but I think a lot of people do without knowing that there's all these other things that sit behind whether we feel happy or not. So for me, it's those things. Am I grounded? Am I balanced? Am I pushing too hard? Like, do I have that right? And we can talk about that. It's the bane of my life. Am I in my practice? You know, all of those things for me. Am I connected to my family and my friends? Do I feel like I am on my purposeful path? All of those things to me is what happiness means.
And it's interesting because you did say the word connected quite a few times in that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that relationship. How does that kind of play out for you personally? How important is connection in the various ways?
I mean, connection is so fundamental, right? I mean, I think one of the longest pieces of research that was ever done on human flourishing was around connection and social interactions. For me personally, that has many different levels. It's connected in my spiritual practice, which is so important to me. And I spend hours, literally hours a day in spiritual practice. Connection to my son, who's 23, who is has been traveling, but is home, to my parents, my family, my friends, my community. You know, I do all of my work is in service to my community. So all of those different aspects of connection. And what we sometimes lose as women is that deep connection to myself, to my intuition, to my knowing of, am I moving through the world as I want to move through the world? Mm-hmm. And that connection really is the foundation for everything else.
I appreciate that on so many levels, what you just said, and I totally am in agreeance with everything you said. And yet there's this part of me that is like, that's a lot. How many hours in a day do you have? You know, how do we achieve this? How do we stay connected to all those things?
Yeah. And it doesn't need to be complicated, and it doesn't need to take a long time. You know, my work, and certainly the way that I teach and coach is all, and write in my books, is all about the, like, what's the smallest step? What's the smallest action? So for me now in my life, yes, I have a deep and, you know, rigorous spiritual practice. But for a long time in my life, I had 5 minutes. You know, I was a single mom, I had a, you know, big executive job, I was surviving, right? Struggle town, survival mode, just trying to get through the day. And I know many of your listeners will relate to that. So if you're in that season, we're all in seasons. I'm in a different season now. But if you're in a really hectic season where there's not much time for yourself, it can be, I'm going to take 5 minutes in the morning and I'm going to do something that grounds me. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to do a mindfulness practice. Maybe I'm going to read a few pages of some form of book that, you know, makes me feel connected to myself. Could be some, you know, a little bit of yoga. Could be just standing outside with a cup of tea for 5 minutes before the kids wake up. Doesn't have to be complicated, but we have to factor it in. Because when we don't factor it in, we do what I did for more than a decade of my life, is that we're just on the treadmill, we're going. And there's no circuit interrupt. So yeah, it looks different for all of us. And sometimes, like, I run a business, incredibly busy days, and it's that 2 minutes in between meetings. You know, it's that 2 minutes, I'm just going to sit here for a minute. I'm just going to breathe, calm myself, ground my energy. Okay, great. I'm ready to go again. So yeah, doesn't need to be fancy.
Huge. Yeah. So what about the times when you kind of, as a single mom, you know, I imagine that there were some really hard times and busy times and times where you lost that connection. And I imagine there's probably been times in your life, whether they went hand in hand or not, where you also probably have lost the happiness. Talk to me about those moments and how you've kind of come out of them.
So I would go even further than that and say that for a long part of my corporate career, and I was in corporate for 18 years, That's a long time, right? And it really, you know, through those pivotal 20s and 30s and early 40s of my life, and for up until probably the last 5 years of my corporate career, and I left 10 years ago, I had no connection. So it wasn't even when I lost it, like I had none. I was literally in survival mode. I was a workaholic, a single parent. I was, you know, in big jobs. I was just trying to get through the day. And I've just written about this in my book that I've just finished. You know, I used to, when my son was younger, put him in the car in the morning to get him to school, and I'd be crying. He'd be crying. And I'd be like, there is no, I won't swear, there's just no way I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. Like, this is just too hard. And it wasn't until I had a major burnout when I was 36. And I literally walked into my CEO's office one day and I just said, like, I'm done. I can't do this for one more minute. I was sick. I was exhausted. You know, my son wasn't, you know, like, as flourishing as he should have been as a six-year-old, because we had all this like stress and tension. And like, that's the point that I started to change my life. But it was a long path as well. So we all have these journeys, these heroine's journeys as women. It's, you know, for me, it was about really trying to get clear on what is it that I want my life to look like? What is it? Because it's not this. This is not it. I don't want to feel like this every day. I don't want to be this racing, driving, striving, exhausted, burnt out, sick person. And that was the start of a whole nother journey.
Mm-hmm. So then what, fast forward a bit then. So you went through your burnout and you say it was a long journey. What got you to where you are now?
A lot of work. A lot of reflection. You know, I came out of that burnout. I gave up my job. I was director of marketing at IBM at the time. So $5 billion business, hundreds of people in my team, like big job. And I negotiated to take a couple of months off to get myself back on the path, and came back in a newly created role. I was doing what many women do, which is three jobs in one job. You know, when I hear this all the time in our community, we have thousands of women in our Women Rising community, and they say, oh, I resigned. They put three people in to replace me. Right? In this, as women, we get it done. One of the jobs I was doing then was director of strategy. Was strategy, but just rolled into my marketing role. So we negotiated that we would carve that role out. And I did that for 7 years, part-time as an exec. And then that sort of freed up some time and space. And this burning question I had around happiness, around how do you actually be well and thriving as a woman? As a mother, as a worker, as an employee, as a daughter, and how do you work out what is my true purpose for work in the world? And that was the journey that I went on. So after my burnout, I went and did my yoga teacher training, not because I wanted to teach, because I wanted to learn. I did that. I did a second master's degree in wellness and positive psychology, because I wanted to get into the science of thriving. And that was, you know, that completely Wow. revolutionized my world. And it was just all of these steps. I call them the breadcrumbs of, you know, your purposeful path. And I just kept picking them up. Another one was all of my work around women, women's leadership, women's coaching, women's mentoring, because I knew that somewhere in the mix of those three streams, that was my future. Mm-hmm. And I just kept picking up breadcrumb after breadcrumb. And then eventually it all morphed into the work that I do. And 7 years after that burnout, I left my corporate career. But yeah, it's the pieces. Take a step. What does this feel like? Take a step. What are the things that I need to do to feel happy, contented, grounded, well? What works, what doesn't work? Like, it wasn't a straight line. It was very much like this. And, you know, those twisty those twisty curves to get to where I am now, which is more straight, but still twisted, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, thank you so much for giving us that insight, and you've kind of tied in a few things there I was going to ask you. And I think it leads to a good segue about leadership. And you talk about in on your website pages about authentic leadership. And I myself have had a corporate background and quite toxic places at times, some of the most challenging times with other women as well as men, mostly women, to be honest. How do we as women, this is a big question as well, they're all big. How do we as women lead without being threatened by other women? How do we support each other and still have this authentic leadership that we want to have, this true leadership, which can be very challenging? I guess it's kind of a question and a statement in one, because I know that there's also with a lot of men out there in the world that are the leaders and women are starting to rise up. How do we still stay authentic with feeling like we've got to fight against the men that are already the leaders and the women that don't want us to be the leaders? How do we do that?
So we have 5 hours for this podcast, right? This is the topic of the entire 92,000 word book that I've just written, right? So we'll have another really interesting conversation when that comes out, I'm sure. This is one of the questions of our time. And, you know, what I've been writing about is, and which is core to the work that I do with Women Rising, is how do we understand the forces out there, the forces external to us that compromise our authenticity, how we want to live, work, lead, love, how we want to parent, how we want to show up, and what are the forces inside of us? And the stories that hold us back and keep us stuck, and then what are the tools that help us rise? So like that literally is what I've been writing about and what I, you know, teach and coach on. And it's very complex, right? Like we think, I've been working in gender diversity and equality for, gosh, 15, 18 years now. And like we think we're just going to find the silver bullet. We think we're just going to find that one thing. Organizations are going to do this, or male CEOs will do this, and everything will unravel and change. And it's just not true, right? I think the same people, we know that. But what we don't talk about is like, what are those forces? What are the challenges to our authenticity, the successful leader model, the ideal worker model, the gender norms and biases and expectations that are rife in workplaces and in society more generally, the, you know, the double bind, the likability penalty, all of these things for women that tell us, we want you to lead, but don't lead like that. We want you to show up authentically, but don't show up like that. You know, we want you to speak up, but don't be aggressive. Don't be abrasive. All of these things, and they compound and compound and compound. So there's that side of it. There's the side that you talk about around women and women leaders not supporting women coming through or supporting at that peer level. And again, it's so complex, right? Because we look at and we think, well, why do women behave like that? Well, why do some women sometimes behave like that? Because that's how they've been socialized. You know, there's one place for a woman, so you better fight and scratch your way to get there. And that scarcity mentality and mindset that, well, we can't bring all the women with us because then what's going to happen to me? And we've certainly seen that in generations above me, like I'm a Gen X, you know, baby boomers who had to fight so hard. And that permeates cultures. And those women, some of those women who had to completely morph and change themselves to fit into a masculine mode of leadership, because that's what was expected. And it's the only way that you survived. And there's so many remnants of that that are still in our workplaces today. So younger women look up and go, a couple of things. If I have to be like that to lead, And if I have to completely change myself, you can have it. I don't want it. Mm-hmm. And we see that in our data of women, like 1 in 5 women of non-retirement age have told us that they're considering leaving the workforce, not just their place of work, the workforce altogether. Like, that's a staggering statistic. Mm-hmm. And women just don't feel like that they can show up as who they truly are. There is, you know, no commission. So this is the work that we're doing, right? This is what we are trying to change. And what I always tell women and teach in our work is, like, it has to start with you. It has to start with you having clarity on who you are, on what you want, on where you find meaning and purpose, and what you want your life to look like. We have to start from that place. Because as long as we wait for the system to change, we'll be waiting forever. Like, I firmly believe the only way we're going to see change is when the women collectively, when all of us rise up and when we've got our male allies over here. And I just got off a call with 100 male allies this morning. You know, the male allies see it, they get it, they understand it, and they're standing beside us to help women rise. That was a long answer, but it's very... And I didn't even scratch the surface, right? But I want everyone to understand, like, this is really nuanced. And it's systemic. It's not something that we can just flick one switch and it's all going to change.
Yeah, that is deep in that answer. I mean, we could go down the rabbit hole and pick out any one of those aspects of what you've just talked about. You're right. It is very deep. Thank you. So let's talk a little bit about Women Rising. Tell me about what it is, what is the goal, and how do you achieve it?
Oh, Women Rising, so near and dear to my heart. So we are a women's leadership and empowerment company. The core of what we do is the Women Rising program. So it's it's a virtual 4-month personal and professional leadership journey, very much about self-leadership. It's all evidence-based through positive psych and neuroscience and leadership science and well-being principles right at the core. But it takes women through this journey, like exactly what I just said. Like, what is it that you want? Who are you right now? Not who were you 10 years ago, right now. And how do you unlock, you know, your life vision, your meaning, your purpose, your confidence, but in a very real and grounded, true way, not a fake it till you make it way. And then all of the building blocks of career and leadership development. So that's the core of what we do. We've supported about 7,000 women in 3 years in 58 countries through that program. So, like, that is the crux of our incredible community. But we do a lot of free work. I do free coaching every month for a community of thousands of women. We have free resources and articles. And our mission is to, like, we want to impact 1 million women in the next 5 years. Mostly through all of the stuff that we do for free, so that all women can access the tools that they need to get clear about what they want, to have confidence in who they are, to have the tools to show up authentically, and the tools and support and coaching to lead. That's what we do. And we're also doing a lot of work with male allies. So we have to bring men in to the, not just to the discussion. We have to bring men into the support and the empowerment of them to see the problems and to have the tools and the support in an inclusive way, not a judgmental way, so that we can all do it together.
There's that connectedness again.
What's that connectedness again? Yes. I love that link.
So, You mentioned there something that's kind of a theme for me at the moment, which is really you have to know who you are. And I think there's a big part, I mean, there's a lot of people in the world, not just women, but we are specifically talking about women here who struggle to really believe in themselves and understand who they are and to value themselves and find their worth. So how do you kind of achieve that through, whether it's in Women Rising or the sessions that you do? Like, what's some tips that you can give to our listeners on how to start?
So the first place, and you don't need to come into our program to do this work, right? And on our website, on my website, there's heaps of content and articles and tips and tools, right? So you don't need to, to pay money to know how to do this. Although, you know, the coaching, like, it's amazing. But the first thing that we need to do to start is we need to stop. And this is often the biggest challenge for women, right? It sounds so simple, but we have to create space in our life, in our days, to pause, to breathe, to ask questions. Because so many women, and we see them in our community every day, and I was that woman, we're just running. Yeah, we're on autopilot. We're on that treadmill. There is no space, time, energy to breathe, number one. And number two, we're so busy thinking about everybody else that there's no permission for us to think about ourselves. And again, coming back to the most simple, practical, what's the smallest step I can take, is carve out 10 minutes a day, 10 minutes. Everyone can find 10 minutes, right? If you can't find 10 minutes, then message me. No, don't message me. I used to say that it was fine. Now it's problematic. But find some time to sit, to be quiet with yourself, and to tap in so that you can start to get guidance and think about, like, what is it that I want? And even before we ask, what is it that I want? The first question is, how do I feel right now? How do I feel right now? How do I feel in my body? How's my breath? How are my emotions? We talk about happiness, you know, positive emotions, negative emotions. And if we can start doing that as a practice, and I recommend everyone build a meditation practice. It is the thing that's probably changed my life more than anything else in terms of my happiness, contentment, groundedness, well-being. And that can be 5 minutes once a day. The more that we can do that and build it in and make it non-negotiable, the more we will start to understand, who am I right now? And then we can ask the questions around, like, what is it I want? We've got a great free resource called the Possibility Planner on our Women Rising website, and it has the questions, right? It has, these are the questions that you can ask. It's like a workbook. And once you have that space and you've started to quieten yourself down, find your breath, get some spaciousness in your mind, then you can start working through something like that. And again, 10 minutes a day. It doesn't have to be 5 hours on a retreat, you know, on the weekend.
Although that sounds beautiful too.
Well, that sounds like, I just came from Byron Bay actually. So
Oh, nice.
A lot of retreat, but on a little reset for myself because I needed it. So yeah, that's always, you can get away as well.
And I think it's a beautiful place when you are so in tune with yourself that you actually can know when it's time for yourself to go on a retreat. Yes. I think it takes a lot to be able to get ourselves to used to listening to ourselves and our bodies and what we need. It actually takes a lot for us because we're taught to not do that. We're taught just to keep pushing and going. And I know for me, it was almost like, you know, the epiphanies I've been having over the last 5 years have been that my productivity does not equal my worth. You know, I don't have to keep pushing and being busy to know that I'm lovable or that I'm great, you know? And so I guess that raises a question as I'm saying that, you know, what is success? Because I think success is what makes us keep pushing against the wall. You know, I can keep going. What is success to you? What does that mean? What's the definition?
So I love this question. Because the first thing we have to realize is that success is different for all of us, but we are often living our lives and gearing everything that we think, that we believe, that we do around someone else's definition of success for us, especially as women, right? Mm. So we could unpack that for 3 hours as well. For me at this, in this season of my life, because we'll have seasons that we're in, and I'm in a very different season now than I was even a couple of years ago when my son was still at school, and where I'm at in my business and creative journey. Success for me is about the meaning that I get from the work that I do and the contribution that I make. It is about my family, you know, my son, my parents, my brother, and connectedness again to those people who I hold, you know, so near and dear to me, my friends. Success is about my spiritual journey and my well-being. And those two things for me are inextricably linked. Mm-hmm. And success for me is also about time to create. You know, we were a startup, we're now a scale up. And if there's any entrepreneurs listening, you will know especially that startup phase. We're an ed tech company, like that startup phase is just so intense. And me having time to create, meaning write, because I create things all the time, programs and things for work, but to be able to write, like I've just written this book, is part of who I am. And it's part of what I need to feel happy. So if I'm not doing that, then I don't feel successful.
Mm. And how different that is, you're right, like how different that is to the old, I will make X amount of money and I will climb the career ladder, you know, that's very different.
Yeah, and that was success for a large part of my career. Mm. And it's so interesting hearing you say that, because when I think of success, I don't even think about money, mm. right? And we see this in the research, right? There's a, I need to have enough money to pay the mortgage and, you know, like do all of the things. And my business is successful, but it's not part of my success criteria. Like as long as I could meet all of my needs and my family's needs, I would still consider myself successful. Like that, mm. the money, it's not a goal in yeah. terms of what I need to validate myself and my life.
Oh, I love that. There's so much strength in that right there. Not having that as a marker.
Yeah, but that's true. Mm. Yeah. And that doesn't mean that if that is your success marker, that there's anything wrong with that. Like, go for it. Yeah, you want to make $10 million? Go make $10 million. Fantastic, right? Like, own your choices. Mm-hmm. Be clear on what they are, you know? Yeah. And it doesn't mean that I don't want to make money in my business. We're a for-profit enterprise. You know, I have 12 women in my team that I support them and their families and everything through the work that we do. So there are those factors, you know, in it. But, yeah, not as a goal unto itself.
Yeah, I think that's important. Thank you for saying that, because it's not like we're shaming money. And
I love money. I love money. But I think there is, you know, the old definition of success, as you said, climb the corporate ladder, get the money, get the trappings of success that we can then demonstrate to the world that we are successful. And, you know, I think there's so much awareness and evolution and consciousness around the fact that that's not going to make you happy. We know that, again, from all of the science. But you don't have to be a researcher to figure that out. But money's not bad.
Yeah.
What? Money's not, like, we love money. We need money. We need more women to have more money so that we can have that distribution. One of the things I love most about making money in my business is how much we give away. Mm. You know, scholarships and the Women Rising Foundation and the charities that we support. Like, money's good. We need it in the right hand and in the hands of women.
There's the energy transaction behind that money commodity value, isn't there? Yeah. Okay. So I would love to know, a little bit more about your spiritual practice, because you've shared that that's something that you do every day, and I'd love to delve a little bit into what does that look like. We've talked a little bit about spirituality on the show, and we've had various people that are either right up there with spirituality, or they're just scratching at the surface, or some that even aren't at all. So we've had everything. And I just would love to hear what yours is.
So the thing I'll say about spirituality, like, it's very personal, right? Like, it's a very personal thing. It means something different to every different person. Even if you're in the same spiritual practice with people, it still can mean something completely different to me than what it can, like, to my friend Sophie, who's in my spiritual practice group. Excuse me. So it's very, very personal to different people. For me, it is a whole fusion of things in my practice. And there's been iterations of this in different seasons of my spiritual journey. From when I first, like, when I was a teenager, I used to read all the spiritual books and people used to think I was weird. And, you know, then reading Marianne Williamson, A Return to Love, when I was 21, and just blew my mind, like, changed. Like, a physically, alchemically changed who I was, and, you know, iteration after iteration. And then a long period of time, nothing, like, corporate, climb the ladder, be successful, all of those things, right? So now it is a mix of things like meditation. I do Vedic meditation, just like the 20-minute twice a day practice. It is, I do a lot of work around the Vedas and Vedanta and teachings, like deep sacred teachings from India. We do a lot of sadhana practice, which is, you know, disciplined spiritual practice, which is when I sit and practice for an hour at a time in a day with our, you know, with our small group that I've been practicing with for 7 years. We go to India together on pilgrimage once a year, which is also very near and dear to my heart. You know, mantra, mudras, kriya yoga, asana, you know, physical yoga. It's this beautiful blend. Spiritual readings and teachings, wisdom teachings.
So it's the constant forever student, I want to say. Like, you're a forever student, right? Constant.
Forever student, always learning. You know, always seeking. I mean, I'm a seeker, you know, at my core, always seeking that next level of truth and consciousness.
And see, now I know why I connected with you on the page so well, because I'm right up there with you with all those things. So that makes a lot of sense.
Right. Yeah. And it, you know, every time I write, I'm in my last book, Simple Supple Sacred. Oh. Like, that's a spiritual book. Like, that's a spiritual, a lot of women will read that and they won't know that that's what it is. But that, like, that book was a spiritual transmission through me onto the page. And I don't usually talk about it like that, because we're talking about it. That's what it was. I mean, I had mantras all infused through there. I would always listen to Saraswati when I was writing. I was in my practice as I was, like, it was literally felt like a channel transmission, that book.
Amazing.
And, yeah. Yeah.
And I haven't read the book, and I intend to, but I did love the title, because simple for me, we do overcomplicate so much these days, and our minds can just take us in places that are like, why are we creating so much complexity? It's like, the ego and the mind just want labels and boxes and more intelligence and more, like, things we can box and shuffle and compartmentalize, you know?
Yeah.
So I appreciated that title.
Yeah. It's so funny, because that book was meant to be a different book. And I just wasn't feeling it. And I kept talking to my publisher. I'm like, oh, I'm just not in it. Like, when you write a book, like, you got to be in the book. And I just wasn't in it. And I kept moving the deadline. Like, I moved it like 12 months. And I was sitting in Byron. I go to Byron to write sometimes when I'm in the middle of something or at the start of something. And I was sitting there doodling on my page. And I was like, what do I want this to feel like? Like, what do I want to come through for this book? And I just wrote down simple, soulful, sacred.
Wow.
They're the three things. And then the whole book unfolded, you know, for me. And like, they're the three things that I try to live my life. Simple is the one I struggle with the most. I'm pretty good on the soulful and I'm pretty good on the sacred. But the simplicity, as you say, and it's just getting harder, right? Like, the world is so complicated and so complex. And our lives as women are so busy and so complex that finding the sun. I'm really into Zen at the moment and doing a lot of reading about Zen and trying to just strip it all out, you know, and just get back to like, what is the core that matters the most? Like, I'm in this process. I said to my son, I said, I literally want to clear out my whole house. Like, I'll just give it all away because I'm just craving that simplicity. And I think it's very hard. I think it's very hard for us. To do that, but I think it's also one of the most important things is to get back to the core of what matters and try and let, you know, that noise and the stuff and the complexity dissipate.
Oh gosh, I love everything you've just said. I'm hanging on to every word. So I want to ask another question around leadership, I guess. In terms of, what would be your opinion of what is the biggest problem or challenge that women face in leadership, whether that be leadership in their own lives or in business, or, you know, you can translate that however you want.
It's one of my favorite topics. Again, there's the internal and there's the external, right? So from an internal perspective, it is, who am I and what do I want? Who am I and what do I want? And that clarity around that, because I find that so many of the other issues that I see around women in leadership, confidence, inner critic, imposter syndrome, authenticity, owning their traits and how they really want to lead versus how they think they should lead, claiming their own model of success, determining the roles that they want, all of the things, how they look after themselves and where they prioritize their well-being on all of the different levels. So much of that stems from, who am I and what do I want? And that's why when we do the Women Rising program work, it's the very first thing. And women come in, can imagine all these career women, professional women, corporate women come in, they put in the program and they're like, what do you mean we're talking about me first and who am I and what do I want? Because no one's ever asked them, certainly not in a career context or in a leadership context. So that's why I always come back to this. What do you want your life to look like? How are you grounded in what you say is important through what you're doing every day? And how are you crafting the life that you want? Not what everybody else expects you to do. So from an internal perspective, because then we get into, as a leader or wanting to be a leader, what are the stories I'm telling myself? What is my inner critic saying to me that's stopping me from showing up how I want to show up and from creating the life, the leadership journey that I want to create? So that's the internal, that's our work to do. And then there's the external, right, which is being aware of the patriarchy and the structures and the power and the privilege that exists all through our workplaces. Because when we can see it, then we realize, and this is a profound moment for women when we do our work together, because they say, oh, I thought it was just me. I thought it was just me. I thought I was, and we're sitting here in our shame and our blame. But when we start teaching, this is what the world actually looks like. Here's the patriarchy. This is the power structures. Here are the paradoxes. This is the environment that you live and work in every day. Here are the biases at play. then they can go, oh, now I get it. And they can do their work, but they're not doing their work wrapped in shame and blame that they haven't been able to succeed, or they're not confident enough, or all of these things that stop their leadership journey, and they can take agency over it. So we have to do those two things. We have to see what's out there, or we work on what's in here. Then we create the leadership journeys that we want, or whatever it is that we want for ourselves.
Wow. Gosh, I needed you like 15 years ago.
What did I? I needed me 15 years ago as well. And 20 years ago and 25 years ago. Yeah. Yeah.
And like, it's, you know, it's a lot. We do all have those stories. I mean, I guess that is part of our journey, right? Is that we're meant to face these challenges time and time again to strengthen and overcome them. And I know for me in the workplace, there's been a lot of challenges. I've always seen myself as a leader because of, I'm quite confident and I seem to, I don't know, draw myself into these leadership positions without even really asking for them. But with that obviously comes all those challenges. Is there something you'd like to discuss?
Oh gosh, you've done such a great job. Like, we've gone in so many different places. I just always want women to honor themselves enough to do the work.
Mm-hmm. Right? Honor themselves enough to do the work.
To do their work.
Can you unpack that?
Yeah. When we're running so hard and taking care of all of the people and doing all of the things, sometimes we're doing that, number one, because it's how we're programmed, right? Number two, it's what's expected. Number three, it's what our habit is. Yeah, we just, again, that's why I always say treadmill, because that's what I was for such a long period of my time, a long period of my life. And we just keep going. And the work that it takes to stop and get uncomfortable and ask the questions about who am I, what do I want, often feels much harder than I'm just going to keep going. Mm. Right? I'm going to stay with the discomfort in the comfort of what I know for my life. And part of that is this deeper sense that we see, and again, 7,000 women in 3 years, right, that I've done this very intimate work with, is that I'm not worthy of the time, the energy, the effort, and I don't have permission, somebody else's or my own, to want something else for myself. Mm. So when I say I want people to know that they're, women to know that they're worthy to do the work, that's what I mean. You are worthy to create the 10 minutes in the morning for yourself. You are worthy to read a book that's going to fill you up, not just distract you from your life. Mm. You are worthy to go download the possibility planner and ask yourself these questions. They're very gentle, because my work is very gentle, but they're also very profound. And you're worthy to start taking the small steps to build a better life for yourself that is in alignment with who you truly are.
Wow. I always sign off my podcasts with, you are loved and you are worthy. And it's funny you say that, because worth, I do think the lack of worth creates that fear and the, you know, so much that we can just hide and crumple and, you know, it's very powerful. So I'm totally there with you about encouraging people to go in and find their worth. And it's a continual journey. You don't flick the switch and it suddenly happens,
no,
right?
No, you don't. And when you start to understand your worth, and so it sounds so trite, right? Oh, just love yourself. But it's not. Like, it's a very deep thing. But when we do really understand our own worthiness, what we will accept and tolerate in our lives, in our careers, in our businesses, in our relationships, completely changes.
Mm.
You know, the reason that so many of us as women struggle with setting boundaries is because we don't think we're worthy of them. You know, we don't think we're worthy of the time that we want to go and spend on ourselves, with our friends, whatever it is.
Mm.
It's the foundation of confidence. You know, we talk about confidence like it's a pill that you swallow. It's not a pill that you swallow. It's work that you do. Yeah. Mm.
Amazing. Do you know, throughout this podcast interview with you or chat with you, I have had about 6 occasions where I've wanted to literally go, yay.
I love
things
that.
You've said, it's just this inner feeling of, come on, yeah, you got to cheer that. I love that. So thank you so much for sharing. I'm just going to ask you a quick fire round of fun questions.
Okay.
What is your favorite book, either all time or just now?
One of my favorite books of all time, let's do that, is A Woman's Worth by Marianne Williamson. So she wrote that 2 years after she wrote A Return to Love. It was like 1993. I was 23. You can do the maths. And it fundamentally impacted how I think about women. But a few others, like The Heroine's Journey, Maureen Murdoch. She was the first one to take the hero's journey and say to Joseph Campbell, that doesn't apply to women. This is what women's journeys actually look like, you know, through Jungian psychology. Awakening Shakti by Sally Kempton would be another one that would be right in there in terms of one of my favorite ones. And another one that I keep listening to on audiobook is The Surrender Experiment by Michael Singer.
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Yes, I have. I do know. Michael Singer's amazing.
Amazing. So that book on audiobook, if you can get the version of him reading it, phenomenal. And then I'm like, well, I've got so many books by my best. So I'm always in study and learning and tantra and, you know, Vedanta and like all of the things for my spiritual practice. But yeah, there's just a few.
Oh my gosh.
I
love them all. Don't be sorry. I love it. Keep them coming. So what are you trying to unlearn?
Oh, that's a great question. Oh, I'm going to borrow that question. What am I trying to unlearn? Busyness, striving. They're two of my big ones right now, and they're linked. You know, that striving, and for me, it's striving for impact. Like, how can I have more impact? How can I, you know, where are the women? Where are the women? And the striving leads to the busyness, and the busyness leads to burnout. So for me, like that's one of my fundamental lessons in this lifetime.
Again, I'm like, yay. best advice about happiness you've ever been given?
It's such a good question. I would say meditate. Yeah, meditate. And that's certainly my advice for others about happiness. Meditate.
If you could wave your fairy wand, what would you change about the world?
Peace.
And what is one practical tool that we could put into practice today that could help us achieve more happiness?
Meditate. literally, like on all levels, right? Like meditate, start with 5 minutes, sit somewhere, close your eyes, follow your breath, done. Don't expect all the thoughts to disappear out of your mind because they're not going to. And follow your breath and then build from there. I truly believe that if everybody in the world meditated, the world would be a very, very, very different place. Because we would have calm, grounded, peaceful, thoughtful, awake, conscious human beings. That would lead to peace on all levels.
Yay. I'm like your cheer squad, aren't I?
Yeah, it's great. I love that.
I think everybody should have a cheer squad. That's amazing. Thank you so, so, so much. You've been absolutely wonderful. And thank you for the work that you do, because you are creating beautiful ripples throughout the world. And as I said, your energy is fantastic. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for the work that you are doing. And there's not many more important topics than how do we be happy? So thank you for your work.
Wasn't Megan just amazing? And thank you so much for joining us today. Here's the key takeaways. Authentic leadership. Megan emphasizes the importance of self-inquiry through two critical questions. Who am I and what do I want? This introspection is key to overcoming self-doubt and societal biases, paving the way for authentic leadership. Recognizing one's worth and dismantling societal shackles enables women to navigate their leadership journey with resilience and consciousness, the foundation of self-worth. Central to Megan's ethos is the undeniable importance of self-worth. She encourages women to really honor their worthiness, allowing them to assert boundaries, engage in self-care, and make life choices that resonate deeply with their true selves. This shift not only cultivates self-confidence, but also changes how women interact with the world. Spiritual practice is a pathway to happiness. Megan heralds meditation as a cornerstone for peace and happiness. This simple yet profound practice fosters inner clarity, grounding, and a sense of calm, contributing to personal peace and, by extension, global harmony. Living simply, soulfully, and sacredly. Inspired by her own experiences and eloquently captured in her book, Simple, Soulful, Sacred, Megan advocates for a life that cherishes simplicity, dives deep into the soul's journey, and recognizes the sacredness of the everyday. This philosophy really urges us to reflect and align our lives with what truly matters, the ripple effect of conscious living. Megan's insights offer a compelling call to action for all women to journey towards self-discovery, embrace their intrinsic value, and lead lives of profound fulfillment and empowerment. Her wisdom illuminates the path to a life that not only nourishes the individual, but also inspires collective transformation towards a more peaceful, empowered world. Wow. This woman is changing the world. And if you'd like to be a part of her programs, please go to the show notes where you can either purchase her book or join one of the online programs or teachings. Thank you so, so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. And remember, you are loved and you are worthy. Lots of love, everyone.